Today on Movie World, as we talk about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yosti as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theaters, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hey, everyone.
Hello.
In what will probably be our last recording of...
Together,
yeah, in person, yeah. That's right, of 2018, because it's that almost that time of the year, and Yosti's going to take a little bit of a trip, so... We
waving to us.
We won't see you in 2018 after this podcast.
But it is always fun podcasting with you when you're home in Mumbai.
That's right. With all the screeching noises.
I love the cars.
So atmospheric. Yeah. I don't know that the listeners appreciated it very much, but it was definitely atmospheric. We loved it. So.
I can't believe it's almost the end of the year.
How did that happen?
I know.
It's so annoying.
Although our last month has been spent. Watching.
I was going to say, our podcast schedule has been a little bit off lately, in part because you guys in particular, as members of San Diego Film Critics, have had to gorge yourselves on movies. Rashmi at one point was like walking around the house with
carrying various
devices, because like she'd switch off the TV, then she'd grab her iPad and carry on watching, and then she'd go to bed and have her laptop with her and be watching there. And she was always engaged in some sort of movie watching. It was like, what's happened to Rashmi? Like, where is she? She's watching movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, to make it clear, it's not because you got possessed or anything. But it's
correct.
It's because Rashmi and I...
Debatable.
Yes. Sometimes.
We are both voting members of the San Diego Film Critics Society.
Yes.
And last week
I'm very happy to be part of it.
And last week we had to... make our nominations and then subsequently
vote.
So we needed to have watched as many movies as we could so we could make informed decisions.
Correct. And you know, I do take it very seriously. So I do like to watch everything on the think list because sometimes you just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we relied on what everybody else told us.
Correct.
You know, we'd be watching a lot of crap.
Yes.
And missing out on a lot of good stuff. So we have to judge for ourselves, yes.
Correct.
But the nominations were made and then the vote was done, so...
Yes, and we live tweeted and live Facebooked.
You did, but for those that didn't catch that, what ended up being the winner from San Diego Film Critics?
Leave No Trace. Got Best Movie and Best Director.
Director, Deborah Granik.
And that was the movie. Did we record that on the podcast?
We did. We had an episode. Yep.
I felt like we saw that.
I think we were late to the party. Yes, you probably saw it way earlier than we did.
Yeah.
And we were blown away by how amazing the movie was. And it's not that it's amazing because it's action packed and you know, got an incredible story arc. It's because it's about a father and a daughter who live on the fringe of society.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember watching that movie and finding it absolutely spellbinding. So I'm really happy about that choice.
And Yasi reminded me just a few minutes before the podcast started that actually three really good movies this year have been about people who live on the fringe, which were Yasi,
The Rider, and Lean on Pete, which are both about, you know...
Horses.
Men and horses, you know, a boy and a horse. Both The Rider and Lean on Pete. But I think The Rider, Lean on Pete, and Leave No Trace are all about people on the fringes of society.
Amazing young first-time performers in Lean on Pete and Leave No Trace.
They're all spectacular performances. Yeah.
So anyway, they were the winners.
Terrific.
Yeah, and Best Actor was Ethan Hawke for First Reformed, which
is incredible.
He is on a roll.
So deserving.
Yeah, he's... incredible work, even for a movie as I don't think we've discussed First Reformed.
We haven't
a movie as weighty and as impenetrable sometimes as, yeah. as First Reform. His work is just outstanding there. Yeah. He is. It's all because of him.
And we could talk a bit later about First Reform, because do you want to tell our listeners what we're doing today?
Yeah, so because we only have one movie to review, despite all the movies that we've watched, you know, a lot of them are going to be released at various points. Some of them may have not had a wide release at this point, but you were sent copies of them to review as part of the end of year Film Critics Society assessment. So, yeah, we thought maybe we'll do a quick roundup of a couple of high points from those. It's not necessarily our best of the year. This is that. We'll save that for another time when the year is actually done, and perhaps when.
Correct.
I would say if folks are looking to watch something during the holidays, these would be movies which have kind of maybe
piqued our interest,
and they're either forthcoming or already released and should be accessible to most folks. So it'll be our recommendations for the holidays.
Awesome.
Yes.
So given that we've only got one movie to review in addition to the chat that we'll have at the end,
yeah.
We do have time today to do a Netflix pick in our usual segment, I Can't Find Anything to Watch on
Netflix.
In fact, we should probably call it something else. I can't find anything to watch on VOD or something like that, because there are tons yeah. of other services now. Like
Amazon Prime has good stuff.
Huge fans of Netflix, yeah. but yes. Amazon Prime is really good these days. I yes. mean, they produce their own original content, and you know, they have kind of a mixed bag. I think they seem to be a little less choosy about the material that they kind of front there, but at the same time they also have deep but pockets,
really good stuff,
and
yeah.
they put their own content that they produce. I think Manchester by the Sea last year mm-hmm. was like their big thing, and this year I think Roma's Netflix, but a couple of big movies have been produced by Amazon. So what's in your lists for at least Netflix or Amazon or whichever service you use?
So I was going to recommend a movie which is Italy's submission to the Oscars this year. But I'm actually changing my mind, because I would like to talk about it when it gets an official release here, that's a movie I absolutely adore. But I'm going to hold off, and I'm going to instead recommend a movie that is quite controversial in that everybody seems to hate it, but I really love it, and that's Cloud Atlas. And it was a movie we saw about a couple of years
ago. I'm laughing because both our faces dropped and we just looked at each other.
I'm about to hurl heavy objects in Yesti's general direction.
But Cloud Atlas is a story. It's many stories. It goes back in time. It has a couple of stories set 100 years ago. It has some stories set in the 70s, some in contemporary times, and a couple others in the future. So it's a very ambitious piece of work from a very ambitious novel by a great writer. And, you know, I think most people, myself included, were trying to find what the underlying theme was which connected all of these stories.
And this was the Wachowski brothers, right?
This was the Wachowski brothers, yes.
And the Wachowskis, I should say.
I don't know how you pronounce it, but Tom Hanks is in it, Halle Berry is in it, Hugh Grant is in it. Oh, gosh, there's so many actors in it. What I took away from the movie, and I think it's particularly relevant right now, is that every episode of humanity and time seemed to indicate that humans are a miserable species, and we will always prey on the lesser amongst us, and we will always exploit and undermine the weaker and the disenfranchised amongst us. And it's a very scathing commentary on humanity as a whole. But I have a lot of love for it, mostly because even when it doesn't work, it's so ambitious.
And it's a good one to watch over the holiday because it's a long movie.
Yes.
And given that it's your pick and it is the holiday season, I won't spend much time bashing the movie, although I will say I had a hard time with this one. It's very ethereal, philosophical, and, you know, for me, somebody like me, not the most accessible material. Even though I'm a big fan of I guess they are the Wachowskis, not the Wachowski brothers anymore.
Correct.
Good. Okay. Rashmi, what's your pick?
Okay. Mine is The Lobster. We mentioned this in a previous podcast fleetingly.
That's when, me enthusiastically
when,
clapping.
When Joe was bad-mouthing Yorgos Lanthimos. But this was released in 2015. It's described as an absurdist dystopian black comedy. And I love the premise of it because you know, in today's society, we spend a lot of time talking about love and partnering up. And this is a world where if you don't have a partner within a certain period of time, if you are left single, then you are turned into an animal. And I'll leave it at that. And it has a stellar cast, including his muse, I think, now Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly, Olivia Colman's in this. I didn't remember her in it.
Yes, she is in it.
Colin Farrell, who also appears in a lot of his movies. This has Leah Seydoux. I mean, it's just a great cast in a really different type of movie. So, The Lobster.
All I will say is I think it's, as somebody who is single and who feels very judged by the world for being single, I think it's one of the best, most scathing satires on how the world sees people who are single.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I found the thing insufferable, but that's because it was directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. And
I'm really happy to say how much love Yorgos Lanthimos is finally getting for The Favourite. He's finally being recognised for the talent that he is.
Yeah. His movie is now really open wide.
It's the Favourite.
The favourite.
Yeah. Which is my favourite.
Yeah. But The Lobster's, it's got a bizarre sense of humour that runs all the way through it. So yes. I'll give it that. not necessarily the easiest of things. You have to, like, it demands that you pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a movie that you can watch casually in any way.
Correct. And Joe, your pick?
My pick, what a difficult month. We have District 9, which I think we've talked about before. Yeah.
Love that movie.
That would be my instinctive pick as just my favorite releasing. But I'm going to pick something that I think is probably on Netflix for the first time. I might be wrong about that, but that's the movie 8 Mile from 2002. Can you believe that? Starring Eminem. Or Marshall Mathers, or Slim Shady, or all one of the various names. But it's a kind of an It's a kind of a biopic about him. It's a character who is very similar to him and the way that he was in his youth. It describes his life in Detroit and being kind of a young up and coming rapper who is white skinned, and so it deals with a lot of issues socially in terms of, poverty, education, race. But it was actually very well handled. I remember, you love him or hate him. He's hard to ignore, especially, back then when he was, I think, at the peak of his fame. Mm-hmm. And I actually found the movie surprisingly effective. It feels very much like a sports movie in that, there's a series of kind of battle raps where, our hero loses, then prevails ultimately. And so, but it has that real kind of, get behind the protagonist type feel to it. And for me, it's a very easy watch. So, again, if rap isn't your thing, don't be too afraid of it. It does have some fruity language in there. But it's a movie that just worked very well for me on many levels. And I was genuinely surprised by that.
And it had Kim Basinger, who hadn't been in a movie for a long, long time. And she was great.
That's right. Yeah,
plays the mother character. Yeah, she was great in it.
And Brittany Murphy was in it.
Yes.
She's a love interest.
The late Brittany Murphy.
I think it was one of her major roles after Clueless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, lots of stuff to watch if you're locked in during the holidays this year. So, Cloud Atlas. We have The Lobster and...
Cloud Atlas and 8 Mile.
District 9 and 8 Mile.
District 9 as well, yes.
Had to skip that one in. Slip that one in. Okay. So, let's get into the meat and bones of this podcast, which is our review of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And I think, Rashmi, you're going to tell us about that.
I am. So this, for me, came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I kept hearing Spider-Man, there's a new Spider-Man movie, and I automatically assumed
another
that...
One.
Yeah,
another
I kind of was hearing it's a reboot, it's a redo, and then I was thinking, really? We just really enjoyed the one with...
No, we didn't. But I know the one you mean, Andrew Garfield.
No, not Andrew Garfield. We had
Tom
the
Holland.
Reboot. Tom Holland.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right, and which Toby I really
Maguire.
Enjoyed. Yeah. Anyway, this one
that was called Spider-Man Homecoming. Yes,
correct.
That's
so
right,
this one is called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and the description is: Miles Morales becomes the Spider-Man of his reality, and crosses paths with his counterparts from other dimensions to stop a threat to all reality. So it's an animation. It's written by a whole host of people. It's directed by Bob Persietti, I think, Peter Ramsey, and
Christopher Lloyd, and
and Rodney Rothman. That's the official who it's directed by, and then a whole host of writers too. And it stars as voice characters Shamik Moore, Jake Johnson, Hallie Steinfeld, Mahershala Ali's in
Nicolas
it.
Nicolas Cage,
Lily Tomlin, Zoe Kravitz. Some interesting, Catherine Hahn, our favorite, whole host of character talking cast. So what did you think of this? Yes, you were the first one of us to see it. And I remember you, without giving too much away, said, you guys should really go see this because we missed the screening.
Yeah, this year has not been particularly prolific when it comes to animated features. I think Isle of Dogs and Incredibles 2 are the two which come to mind. And there's been all kinds of other little movies made for kids.
A lot of foreign language animation. Right. Yeah, which never make it to mainstream.
Yeah, and there wasn't much, you know, big mainstream animated movies other than those two. So I know this movie kind of, like you said, came out of nowhere. And like everybody, or more so than everybody, I suffer from superhero fatigue, and particularly with Spider-Man. I'm like, really? I mean, Sony is just kind of milking this with coming out with a new thing, like months of each other. Like, the Spider-Man Homecoming was released in spring this year. So now, and barely 6 months have passed, and now they're doing another Spider-Man. So I had initially no desire to see it, but because there were so few animated movies that we had seen, and this one was getting good buzz, I went to see it. And it completely won me over, because I'm tired of, you know, the whole origin story, you know, being, you know, bitten by a radioactive spider. How many times do we have to keep seeing this? You know, Batman's, you know, story about his parents being shot. It's like we keep seeing this again and again and again. And this movie recognizes that this is the, I don't know, 9th or 10th or 12th iteration of the story. And it is so smart in every aspect. It's smart in terms of how the story is being written. I'm not familiar with the Spider-Man universe. I didn't even know that there were other Spider-Men besides Peter Parker. And this is the story of Mike Morales, predominantly. So Peter Parker features in it, but the main protagonist is this black kid who also gets bitten by a spider. And then there's this whole concept of different spider people existing in different dimensions and them all coming together. So that part is so nicely done. And then the visuals of the movie are just something else. I was not prepared. The movie pays homage to previous Spider-Man movies. The look of it, there's like, we could talk more about it. There are exquisite scenes where, Mike Morales is looking at Peter Parker, and Peter Parker's on a train, and there's a glass separating them, and you can see his reflection in the glass. And it's like, it's so beautifully lit. It looks hyper-realistic even. There's so much about the visuals. So this movie, purely by virtue of having no expectations, just came out of nowhere and really wowed me. I'm wowed by it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing we need in this world is another Spider-Man movie. And I think, you know, walking into this, I had the same sentiments. In fact, I was so disinterested in this that... I hadn't paid attention to any of the, you know, the press material that kind of finds its way into our inboxes, the trailers. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, seeing trailers a few months out. I don't watch them in the immediate vicinity of movies, but I mean, I couldn't even bring myself to click on the trailer to view this. So I was completely disinterested, and maybe that played into the reaction that I had to the movie, which was, jaw-dropping. This movie is... easily the best Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. I've since kind of gone and looked into, you know, the genesis of the story, and it is based on a book, Into the Spider-Verse, which kind of plays with that idea that I think we've had so many Spider-Men, and like you say, yes, it plays with this kind of idea that there is a dimensional canon or something like that kind of tears a hole in dimensions and allows these Spider-Men to cross-pollinate, Spider-People, I should say, cross-pollinate the various universes. But it's such a clever story. It's so elaborately constructed and it holds together so well. The characters are all both figuratively and literally beautifully drawn. Our main protagonist, the Peter Parker, even the parents of the character Miles, are just kind of a joy to behold. The other Spider People are mm-hmm. all unique and
yes.
and entertaining and funny in their own way and different in their own way. Yet they all kind of tie into the spider. So I was so completely knocked off balance in the best possible way by this. It's going to be one of my top movies of the year, period. Not top animations, but top movies, period.
I love this too. I've always loved the idea of these parallel universes. And who would you be if you were in a parallel universe, and what would that life look like? And they realized that concept so well. Mm-hmm. And not to repeat what you guys are saying, I think the thing that really appealed to me about the movie was it really explored how the really bad guy, the badness and the bad behavior comes from like losing something so mm-hmm. dear to you. So I love how it kind of got into the psyche of why this machine is trying to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, not that it gives you sympathy for the bad guy, but it starts you're to make vested. You understand yeah. that hey, actually, wait. You know, evil comes from loss. In a sense,
it humanized him and correct. Gave him an absolutely infallible motive. Right?
Correct.
Like
correct. You can and see. you don't often see that in a movie, which right. I really loved.
It's not world domination for the sake of it.
Correct. It's kind of, and I love how it played with your expectations around. It makes a joke of the fact that this is the 100 billionth version of Spider-Man, but it does it in such a smart way, and I also like how. It plays with your expectations of what Spider-Person could be. And it realizes the animation so well. I mean, it's the Japanese anime Spider-Person, mm-hmm. the Porky Pig type, you know, Acme version.
Peter Porker.
Of Spider-Person. So loved it. Loved this movie. I think it's out. Yeah, I'm the Wes Anderson, you know, lover here, and I was disappointed by Isle of Dogs. I think this was a knockout animation.
Yeah, I mean, this is written by the same people who did the Lego movie.
Yes.
You know, Phil Lord and Rodney Rothman. Yes. And there is not a minute in this movie which seems tired or...
They know what they're
going
doing.
Going through the motions. It's crisp. It seems light-footed, but there's a lot of plot here.
Yes.
And some really complex themes, right? So there are two different versions of Peter Parker, a blonde one and a dark-haired one, and how they kind of interact with each other, and there are deaths, and...
The twists are really good.
And I really love that... This is the way you need to rejuvenate a franchise is, you know, I don't want the nth, you know, run through Peter Parker. And what they've done is they've gone for a more urban, more diverse, more off the time Spider-Person with this Mike Morales character whose conflicts are, you know, he's still bitten by a radioactive spider and he still doesn't know how to deal with, you know, this sudden powers that he has, but it's all within the context of where he is, what his family situation is, you know, what his insecurities are. And that's so beautifully realized because it feels of the time, it feels of the moment, it feels very 2018 and doesn't feel like another retread of a story from, you know, the 60s or 70s. And again, I can't talk about the visuals. The visuals, I mean, there are certain parts of it where You can actually see the dotted kind of texture, which you often see in comic books, that's been done. And then, you know, we were just discussing. Go on, please.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, the only thing I was going to add to that was you could hit pause at any moment of this movie. Any single frame would do itself absolutely proud as a drawing in a comic book. I mean, and it's you know, it's ever changing. Like the style isn't a consistent style. It feels coherent, but it's constantly changing and surprising you. And it's absolutely fitting for the scene and the moment. I mean, sometimes you have like the comic balloons. Other times you have, like you say, yes, the print style look.
Yeah, and sometimes it looks like you're actually looking at filmed reality. There was one point in the movie, I think it's when you're flying over a city scene, maybe. I actually thought, oh, we've switched to film. It was incredible.
Yeah, and one other thing we talked about right before we started recording was that when I saw it, I was convinced that I was watching a 3D film without the 3D glasses, because the edge, in most scenes, I won't say every one, but maybe 6 out of 10, there was kind of a haziness, a lack of clarity around the edges of the screen. It almost felt like there were two or three superimposed images on top of each other.
Like when you take your 3D glasses off in the cinema just
to check. In a 3D movie, right.
Yeah, in a 3D movie, you're like, oh, okay, that's what it looks like. It actually felt like that.
Yeah.
And it had, and more to that point, I mean, when you do that in a 3D movie, which I do from time to time, I hate 3D, and sometimes my eyes get quite fatigued, you do notice that things that are in the foreground versus things that are further away have different convergence patterns. I don't know if you've noticed that, but they do that here too. But I feel like it was very much an artistic choice.
Yeah.
But it was, I'll say it was distracting at times. It was very
distracting to me, yeah. Yeah,
but it still was entirely lickable. The whole screen was just like, you know, it was just pure eye candy.
Well, yeah,
I can say I haven't seen anything like this before, which is saying something for an animated movie.
Yeah,
no, it's entirely unique and again an appropriate, for a comic book movie.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, a couple of other things, just the. There's not a wasted line of dialogue here. Like every person that we interact with in the movie exists in my mind right now. They all complete. There were no throwaway characters or lines of dialogue. You know, I mentioned in my introduction, you know, the parents, but you know, there's some, you know, beautiful moments in the movie. You know, of him, our hero, you know, protagonist, interacting with his father outside his school, you know, the whole and I think it's in the trailer, but you know, that's just incredibly well done for, you know, what is, you know, ostensibly a movie that, you know, is going to appeal to kids but also adults. You know, these Lego guys really understand every aspect of storytelling
and emotion. They somehow managed to capture a lot of emotion in animation.
Look, it's just a clever movie all around. I mean, there's even, you know, Spider-Man sits at a weird place in the franchise, because it's a Marvel property, but the Spider-Man IP rests with Sony Pictures. So there's been this, I don't know, push and pull. And there's even an animated sequence with Stan Lee, which is really lovely.
Because, yes, you
know, in light of his recent death, correct. But it's an animated Stan Lee, and it's smart. It's not overdone. I think it's just the deftness with which it's been done. You know, nothing's taken for granted. It's not saying, well, a bunch of 10-year-olds are going to watch this. You know, just. You
although know, they could, and they would love it.
They could have, yeah. Just connect the dots, and you'll have the movie made. Yeah. There is no connecting of dots here. It's all very intentionally and very smartly put together.
Yeah, I would caution that you shouldn't take very younger kids to this one, like kiddie kids. I noticed that there were a lot of walkouts during our screening, Joe, and all of them were parents with very young kids. Mm. It's fairly dark at the beginning. I didn't
notice that.
Yeah, I noticed about like 6 or 7 walkouts about 20 minutes in.
Well, I think the visual style is it. I mean, the entire movie is both dense and intense.
Yeah,
like
it feels more graphic novel than animation.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it comes at you thick and fast.
Correct.
And it never ever relents.
Yeah.
Like this movie. Again, it earns your attention, but it also demands your attention.
Yeah.
You know, I say that, you know, from time to time. And this is one that absolutely there's blink and you'll miss it moments.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can imagine that would be hard to follow for some.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm seeing the credits on IMDb and I just realized I don't think it's actively advertised, but... the voiceover of the blonde Peter Parker is done by Chris Pine.
Yeah, I just noticed that as well.
Yeah, and then Oscar Isaac did some voiceover as well in the movie. So I think there's all kinds. I can't wait to see it again.
Chris Pine or Jake Johnson?
Johnson did the...
Remember, there are two.
The other Peter Parker.
He did the main Peter Parker, but there was the blonde one.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
Lily Tomlin.
Zoe Kravitz. Yeah. It's quite something.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage, of course.
Okay, let's sum this one up. Yeah, noir Spider-Man, who's so funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Joe, why don't you start us off?
Sure. I mean, you're already aware that I feel very strongly about this movie. I think it brings a freshness to the franchise. I think it makes me excited to see what more they can do with this character, which is one that I was really not looking forward to seeing any more of. You know, it almost makes me not want to see the final part of what is the inevitable trilogy with Tom Holland, simply because they've been outdone here. They've been outmaneuvered, they've been outwritten, they've been outstylized. This is the Spider-Man that I want to see moving forward. So I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. It was glorious fun. Will probably be purchased by me on Blu-ray as soon as it becomes available. Because I think, you know, because of its, you know, ambition and sheer content cramming, I think I could see this half a dozen times and still see things that I hadn't seen before. Loved it.
Yasti, it's the end of the year.
No, yeah, I know. So it's a heavy 8 for me, 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to an 8. It's definitely the most creative, clever, smart, surprising, exhilarating animated movie of the year for me. So, you know, something like Incredibles 2, which has a lot of heart and it's done with a lot of labor of love, it still feels a little bit stale.
Yeah.
You know, compared to something like this. This is just like a breath of fresh air. So
yeah.
I just want to commend everybody for doing this. I mean, I wouldn't touch this project, you know, at the end of a 10-foot pole, because the whole Spider-Man thing was getting so overdone, and yet they somehow prevailed, and not just prevailed, but took off. So good for them.
Mine's an 8.2. I really, really enjoyed this movie.
Okay.
Good stuff. Okay. So let's then just segue or pivot over to something we wanted to do in this podcast, in part because there have been so many. I mean, we always complain about this every year. We have, you know, this big, huge avalanche of movies arrive very late in the year. They're all playing the awards game, which, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum.
Shame on them all.
Honestly.
On the podcast. So it's frustrating for us as movie viewers, not because, you know, we struggle to watch them all. I mean, that's just a specific problem that you guys have because of the ratings. But it's frustrating to me in that there is so much quality that could be spread over the year. And I really feel that the movies and the studios do themselves a disservice. I mean, clearly they know what they're doing. There's a reason for this, and the financial rewards and repercussions of being recognized during award season are worth the payoff. But so many wonderful, wonderful movies that we thought, at least, the very least that we could do is, you might not get to hear about all of them as reviews on the podcast because they've had small releases, or they might go straight on VOD or whatever. But we thought we'd just kind of share some favorite moments of the end of the year. And this is not our best of, so that will be coming in a podcast near you, probably at the beginning of next year. But just wanted to kind of say, you know, what's come out late that is of note.
And before we go there, talking of favorites, Joe finally watched The Favorite, which Yazzie and I raved about.
So, yeah.
Another Yorgos Lanthimos, which we've loved since we saw it. Joe, we predicted that this would be the one that would
turn you.
So yeah, let's do a quick callback. So, a couple of podcasts ago, I bitched and moaned about Yorgos Lanthimos. I took another opportunity to bitch and moan about Yorgos Lanthimos at the beginning of this podcast when Rashmi spoke about The Lobster. So clearly I'm not a fan of this director, this writer-director. And the two of you did predict in our podcast review of The Favourite that this might be the turning point. Well, here's what I'll say.
Will we regret this?
The Favourite is by far his most accessible movie to date, I think. Mm-hmm. For me, the difficulty I've always had with Yorgos Lanthimos is his excess use of metaphors that basically require you to read in intellectually to what is being depicted on screen and not take it literally, which is a real struggle for somebody like me who can't really appreciate a plot element unless he's like slapped in the face with it. So this was a terrific movie. I think for me, the standout aspect of the movie was the performances, the three mm-hmm. female, everything you said, and I'm not going to repeat, but everything you said about the performances in this movie were absolutely spot on. I mean, you know, they're all three. I can't pick from mm-hmm. them a single moment. It's also very, very funny movie, mm-hmm. And it's incredibly dark. It's deliciously dark and very naughty in ways. Yes. Which, again, I think that's a Yorgos Lanthimos, you know, hallmark. I think it benefits by not being written by him. Mm-hmm. He definitely. So I like this movie an awful lot. I mean, if I was to score it for the podcast, it would be somewhere between a 7 and an 8.
Okay, wow.
And again, it's just because the material itself is so much more accessible than his other movies to date. You don't have to tease apart metaphors. You just have to look at despicable people being despicable to each other in despicable ways and give up all hope for humanity. And the fact that there is an element of truth to the way that this tale is told
is
it's a very stylized truth, but it was still very, very fun.
Yay!
Yes.
That does not make me a fan of this director. And I think a lot of his games were very off-putting. They do this really kind of annoying. Right, so you have these kind of pornographic, slow motion.
It's just ducks running.
Duck, yeah, I know, but I mean, who films a duck like that? I mean, it's like a Carl's Jr.
I think it's just showing excess.
Just showing. I mean, right. You're talking to me who is not willing to interpret any of this stuff. I'm like, why are we seeing slow motion duck porn?
There's no duck porn.
And the other off-putting aspect of it, he really does a lot of exterior shots in particular with this very, very wide angle lens where it distorts everything. Yeah. And you know, I'm like, why is that anything other than a gimmick? But again, it must be telling me something about the scene that I'm not interpreting in my very literal, simple brain. So, but it was great. I mean, I can't knock the movie, and I can genuinely hand on heart recommend it to people for viewing, because the performances alone are just, I mean, it's a marvel. How he gets the performances out of these actors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are great actors.
He's a great actor, but it's a perfect trifecta, right? Again, we talk about this all the time, but it's writing, directing, and acting all coming together to create something that's so much more than 98% of the movies that we see in a year.
Yeah, I think there's two things. I think not that this is a podcast about The Favorite.
We'll take the opportunity. Yes,
I think Lanthimos has an innate sensibility towards creating situations which will cause unease in the audience members. So sure. I think any material that he writes, he wants to create really a disquieting moment for the audience. And then the second thing is also he's done this in all of his movies before, which is that everybody talks with a very affectless cadence, almost like they're reading from a book. Nobody has any intonations in their voice, especially if you notice all the Colin Farrell characters before. But I think this time in this movie, he's working off of somebody else's material, and it's based at least a little bit on history. So he could not, I guess he could have, but he chose not to have that affectless talking. And also, you know, the story is what it is. It's written by somebody else based on a book. So he didn't have a chance to be as maybe disquieting as make you squirm in your chair as much as he would like to.
Plus, I think it's a power play, right? The whole movie is a power play, yeah. Versus, we said this before, a conceptual idea about an alternative universe where things that don't normally happen in our regular universe happen. So I think it's based in more reality, I feel.
Yeah, and you know, we like to think that, you know, the generation we live in is the most transgressive. But, you know, you watch something like this, and again, maybe 80% of it is fiction, 20% is truth. And you watch this and you realize, nope, all the transgressions have happened. They've happened way back when, you know.
Yeah.
And we might find them shocking sitting in 2018. Doesn't mean that it didn't happen then. It's pretty fascinating.
Okay, so I just have to say it again. So Joe gave this a 7 or an 8, and he just gave Spider-Verse 9. Yes. So I think that's a pretty good score from Joe.
It's pretty telling.
Yeah.
But the only other thing I'd like to add is this is not a movie that can be watched passively in any way. Like, I attempted, we had an award screener, and so I attempted to watch it one evening at home, you know, with a laptop open, thinking, oh, you know, these guys told me to watch The Favourite, so I should watch The Favourite. And I gave up after about 10 minutes because I kept finding myself rewinding, because every single line of dialogue in this movie has importance and merit, and you have to, everything reveals some aspect of either the plot or the nature of the character.
Yeah.
So this is a movie that, again, it's out in theatres now. Go see it in that environment. Yes. I think it's absolutely worthy of your time and money to do that. And I don't say that lightly, because I do struggle with you know, this type of stuff.
Yeah,
and don't take your teenage kids with you or grandma with you when you go to see it.
No. Go and indulge.
Go and indulge. And I also like the fact that it's so clever how the movie completely bypasses gender politics. Anytime some people are vying for power, gender always comes in, like, oh, you know, these men are trying to kind of, you know, push down this woman or whatever. But by making this about three women vying for power, that whole thing is completely subverted, and it just becomes this all about Eve kind of fight to get to the top at any cost. And that's what makes it so delicious, I think. So, anyway.
So on to Yassi, and I thought that we would just share with you four. I mean, this is quite difficult for us to do, given how many films we've been watching and how much great content is out there. So we said that we would pick four of the movies that have made some form of impact on us that we haven't told you about before. So my four are, actually, shockingly, three of mine are foreign movies. This never happens. One is called Capernaum. It means chaos. It's about a Syrian refugee boy. One is called Shoplifters. It has a very similar theme. It's a made by the Japanese director Hirokazu Korida. And it's about, again, a family living on the fringe in Japan. Society, Roma. Everyone is going to hear a lot about Roma, and it's well-deserved. It's the Alfonso Cuarón movie. He was famous for Gravity a few years ago.
And Children of Men.
Yeah. And my final one on my list is Vice.
Yes.
And believe me, you will be hearing about all four of these movies as we approach award season. Yazdi, your four.
I would absolutely, I mean, two of those movies would have been on my top four if you didn't call them first. Shoplifters. We were talking earlier in the podcast about three movies this year about, you know, characters on the edge of society. And Hirokazu Koreeda has made, this might be his 14th or 15th movie.
He's got a huge CV.
Huge CV. He has consistently made movies which are plucked from the headlines in Japan. And in every situation, he takes something which looks unthinkable. Like, why would somebody do this when you hear about it in the news? And he invests that with so much humanity, and he invests that with empathy in seeing how this situation might have come to be. So there was a very famous case in Japan about these kids who were found to be living alone in an apartment, and he made a movie about it called Nobody Knows. this is a story about a whole group of people who were recently arrested in Japan, and it turned out they were actually not related to each other at all. And they were petty thieves. And
they live as a family.
And they live as a family. And he uses that to, you know, nobody looks at the tiny minutiae of everyday living as well as Koreeda does. And he kind of asks you to redefine what family means. What is family? What is it? And, you know, I could talk
about Koreeda forever. And the morals, right? It's a very interesting movie about what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And how people react to that.
Correct. And your what you see is wrong might be somebody's greatest truth, and how the two can simultaneously exist. It's full of great actors. There is an actress who has been playing grandma in every single one of his movies in a long time. She passed away recently. She's wonderful in this. But there is the actress who plays the lead character's wife. She is so good here. I mean, I'm going to put her at the top of my list for best supporting actor female. But anyway, just watch this movie. It'll just fill you up because it reveals things at the end you were not prepared for. It just guts you. It's full of... It'll make you think.
Sakura Ando
is just amazing.
Yeah.
And then the other movie that you mentioned that, sorry, I'm rambling more than you did, is Roma. Roma is actually right now, this very minute... probably if you go to Netflix, it'll be the number one movie which will pop up on your Netflix. And I'm going to do something I've never done, which is I'm going to beg you not to watch it. I'm going to beg you to instead try and see if there is a screening on the big screen.
Unless you have a big, big TV.
Unless you have a really big TV, yes. And I should warn you that Roma is one of those movies which does not have, nothing really happens during the course of the movie, although a lot happens. It's a movie which is immersive. It's a movie which is shot entirely in black and white. It's set in 1970s Mexico City. And if you give it 15 minutes of your time, you will sink through time straight into that place. You will be living there with these people.
And it's timeless.
And it's completely timeless. The situation is
timeless, right?
Yeah. It
happens to be set in 1971.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because this is happening somewhere.
Yeah.
In every country.
And I mean, the second half of the movie, I was in awe. Just every single scene, I was thinking, how did they do this? How did they do this? Like, there are all these scenes, if you notice in the movie, where a plane is flying through. And I don't know,
it
would take impossible to capture something at a precise time when a plane is flying through the sky. There are all these external scenes. 30-40% of the movie shot outdoors. I don't know if they use CGI or how they were able to do the production design for this. And at the end of the day, it's a very personal story about, you know, the maid in their house when they were growing up in the 70s. And it to me was a transcendent experience. I just got lost in there. When the movie ended, I was like shocked to be jarred back into reality. I just love Roma so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of those movies are empathy generators, I think. They just kind of make you realize to treat everybody with more love, which is what the world needs. Okay.
Well, and it also, I think, demonstrates that, again, kind of like Shoplifters, what is family? Is family the maid who puts you to bed every night and, you know, kisses your grazed knee when your mother's not around? Or is family, you know...
Yeah.
The Somebody person who gives birth to you, right? Yeah. Yeah. So these are really big themes and beautifully executed. And
And the lead actor, she has no previous acting experience.
Really?
Yeah, she was. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I know people who are frustrated by this movie because I think they cannot get on the same wavelength of the movie, which is very immersive. So don't watch this movie if you're in a hurry. Don't watch this movie if, you know, you need to meet your friends in 2 hours and you're like watching the clock.
Or you're a little sleepy.
Or if you're a little sleepy, just watch it. I think this is what true cinema movie magic can be.
I did not even want to snooze through this for one minute.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's interesting that this is a movie that seemingly demands to be seen on the big screen, and it's, you know, put out by Netflix, so they're going to use it to obviously promote their platform. But is it available in theaters? I mean, yesterday you went to see it at a smaller theater here in San Diego. It's not necessarily available.
I can't speak to other cities. I think it's hard economically to justify showing a movie in a big theater when it's accessible on everybody's computers on their Netflix. But, you know, I can tell you, even though this is a small 45-seat theater, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every single show was sold out, like hours in advance. I wanted to see it on Friday night. I couldn't. The Saturday evening shows were sold out on Friday. I had to book like the afternoon show. So there's clearly a demand. I think people recognize that there is value to see this on the big screen.
It and might not be a everyone very has Netflix. Let's kind of, you know, I don't know if everyone has Netflix. This is my prediction. Look, I think this is going to get a lot of Oscar love. Mm-hmm. This is gonna get cinematography. It's gonna get director. It's gonna get maybe supporting actor. And I think it's definitely gonna get best movie. I think it's gonna be unusual that we're gonna see some foreign language movies in the best movie category. That's my prediction. I agree. I think just by nature of that, we may see it come back as a general release.
Yeah. And I'm shocked because, you know, I'm willing to put down my last dollar. It will be nominated for Best Film, which is very unusual for a foreign film to do. Correct. I was shocked when I saw it in the theater that more than half the audience members were of Hispanic descent. They were of Mexican descent. So I think
that's lovely to me.
People who want that piece of nostalgia. I mean, I saw this movie, and if I had a millionth of the talent of Alfonso Cuarón, I want to make a similar movie about my life in Bombay growing up. And we had people, you know, domestic help who came and helped. And I have lifelong, you know, ties with them as well.
I remember kind you of, telling us some lovely stories. Yeah, so
it's a deeply personal, beautiful story, which is, I don't know.
I was shocked I loved it so much.
Yeah, this is what cinema should be. So anyway, so after we raved about
Roma
and Shoplifters and The Favorite, I am going to make a plea for a movie which is right now in the theaters and it's not doing very well. We already covered it in a previous podcast, but I think everybody who loves movies owes it to themselves to go check out Widows. It's a movie which didn't get a lot of love. It didn't get a lot of. It's not doing very well commercially.
I think
it was our last podcast. But
or the one before.
I really think it's a good film. And then another movie which we talked about last week was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. That one is on Netflix and it's so much fun. It's the latest from Joel and Ethan Coen. It's them doing amazing stuff. People should see that as well.
Okay. So now I have to go back to Caper Norm and I have to give you a little bit more information about Vice. Yes. Okay. So I had watched Shoplifters and I was blown away. And I think, Joe, you had come up just as I was finishing Shoplifters. I was like, oh my God, that was an incredible movie. And then I watched Roma and then I watched Caper Norm. And I watched it because one of our fellow film critics loved it. And when someone has such a violent passion to some movie, either they hate it or they love it, I think that's worth watching.
Yeah.
And I put it on and then I was equally blown away. So this is an amazing story because it's about a Syrian refugee boy, young refugee boy, who is actually a refugee. And so again,
played by a kid who's a refugee.
Actually a refugee. And he's playing a refugee in the movie. And so again, this is young actors doing incredible work. And I know, Joe, you and I always have this discussion about, are they just well-directed or are they actually talented? Maybe a bit of both. This is such a moving story about a terrible situation that's occurring in a lot of countries in the Middle East. And it's a really important story to watch. And again, it's about the fringe and it's about the role of a parent and it's about what is your role of a parent and how do you make the decision to either give away your 11-year-old daughter to an older man because she'll be fed versus the responsibility of keeping that child in your house, right? These are big, moral, horrible questions that we should never have to ask, but it goes there. And it's gutsy, and it's talking about second-class citizens, even in a society that is full of refugees. So it's like looking at the at like
the lowest
of the lowest of the low that are just burdened, and it's not squalor porn. It's not like Slumdog Millionaire. I have heard some people criticize it that way. For me, it wasn't. For me, it highlights things like what it means to live in these paternal societies that are dragged down by doctrine and dogma. And it's just beautiful. It's such a beautiful movie to watch. So that's Kaepernaum, which means chaos. And then something completely at the other end of the spectrum, which is the film Vice, mm-hmm. which is about the vice president, Dick Cheney, played by Christian Bale. And it has a great cast. Again, I think this one's going to get a lot of Oscar love for best actor. And I think Sam Rockwell is getting a lot of praise for his portrayal of George W. And Steve Carell is in this, and Amy Adams is probably likely to get some recognition, I think, for Best Supporting Actress.
I would never cast Sam Rockwell as George W.
He's great. He's actually great.
Wow.
And this really tells of the years, you know, the rise of Dick Cheney and the Bush White House and the Reagan White House and the alliances between Donald Rumsfeld, played by Steve Carell, and Dick Cheney. So it's very interesting, right? So it tells of the early years and what happened, and kind of like it's a more serious version. It reminded me a bit of was it American Hustle? The one yeah. No, not American Hustle. Yeah. The one with Tom Cruise that was about the
American Gangster.
American Gangster.
I know
the one you mean, where he's a
drug. It's in America.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's got America.
Made in America.
Made in America. That was it. Yes. So it's got similar. It's got a similar feel, but it's not as light.
I love that movie, by the way.
Yeah. So it's. I keep telling Joe and Yasti they have to watch this one.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's interesting, and I really want to get your view on it. So that's my four.
Okay. And I would like to give a shout
out. You have one more.
I have one more. Shout out to a movie called Wildlife, which is directed and written by Paul Dano, the actor, and his screenwriting partner, Zoe Kazan.
Who did an amazing performance in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
And it's, remember there was a movie which came out a few years ago, many years ago, with, it was the first movie that Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet had done together after Titanic, and it was a movie called Revolutionary Road,
mm-hmm.
which essentially was about a marriage slowly falling apart. And this movie kind of has a similar, although I think its sensibility is a little bit different, because the whole movie, this movie, Wildlife, is seen through the eye of this teenage boy who is watching what appears to be at the start of the movie a perfect ideal family slowly disintegrate because of certain inevitable choices that are outside their control. The father gets laid off, and you know, he has to find a job. Well, it's who his
father is.
Yeah, his father is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, yes. And then Carey Mulligan, who just knocks them out of the park movie after movie, I think has never been as good as she is here, and that's saying something. And yes. She has a very difficult role, because her character, the mother, once the husband leaves, she behaves, let's just say, very unconventionally. And it's any other actor, I think, would have made this a very flawed, unlikable character, but somehow Carey Mulligan holds it all together and makes you empathize with her. And it's a small movie. I mean, these kinds of movies don't get a lot of love, but I think it's definitely worth checking out.
I think it's worth checking out just for Carey Mulligan's performance. And Ed Oxenbold, who plays the young son, is incredible again in this movie. More of a teenage performance. Jake Gyllenhaal is great. He's mm-hmm. not in it that much. The movie didn't hang as well for me, Yazdi. Mm. It disappointed me a little bit. But considering this is Paul Dano's directing debut, and Paul Dano and Zoe Kazan's first writing gig, mm-hmm. pretty amazing stuff.
You watch this and there's no way you'll believe that this is a first-timer's product.
So. Yeah. Wow. So I would say, I mean, if I was going to score this one, Yazdi, I would probably end up giving it somewhere around like a 7.
Yeah, I would give it an 8. But yeah. I just...
But it's worth watching, because, again, I think Carey Mulligan's performance is fabulous.
Yeah. Just her face.
She carries the movie. Yeah. I mean, everything is an expression.
Just the hurt and just this... you know,
making survival.
Survival, making tough choices and, you know, doing what needs to be done. And there's not a lot of dialogue here. A lot of it is just people behaving in you'd say, like, why is this person doing it? And you can see it in their face. This is why they're doing it. And then finally, a shout out to a movie which came out a little while earlier. It's Paul Schrader, who wrote, you know, Taxi Driver and Mean Streets and all those early Scorsese movies. His latest movie, which was First Reformed. And no matter where you stand right now in terms of the chaos the world is in, politically, ecologically, it talks to very heavy themes like how people get radicalized. Have you seen it, Joe?
First Reformed, yes.
Yeah. And it speaks to this malaise which can set in if you let, you know, the reality of what's going on around you get to you. And it's, I don't even agree with some of the things, but it's so ambitious. It's so provocative. It has a complete puzzle of an ending. And Ethan Hawke is just remarkable here. A guaranteed best actor nomination.
Subliminal, like in his ability to portray such pain again with so little dialogue. I mean, this has so little dialogue in it, I think.
It's a frustrating movie in some ways. I mean, I think it's somewhat conventional until its, you know, final act. And then it goes a little kind of topsy-turvy.
But you never quite know what's happening either.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of interesting to me. It definitely feels, you know, like you're being, you know, there's something happening within this community and the role that the priest plays of the characters. And I think, you know, it just, for me, I have a lot of admiration for the movie and the performance in particular. Just that final scene is one that left me scratching my head, both in terms of how it transpired and then how it left me, how the movie ended. So
yeah, I really liked this movie. I really did like this movie. And I think, again, amazing performance by Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, I think she's great. I think when you take on these big themes, you can just fall flat on your face. And this movie never falls flat on your face. I mean, I would submit that last scene is just an invitation for people to discuss what it means. And you know, he could have ended it any number of ways, but I think he wants to leave people talking about where you stand on all of this. And I'm always fascinated when you find out that, you know, an American person got, you know, radicalized and did horrible acts on behalf of the jihad, or somebody decided to kind of throw a bomb, you know, at Google headquarters because they were angry that they were causing too much ecological damage. And I always wonder, how can somebody get to a point where they do such extreme acts of violence? And this movie kind of explains how you can get to that state. I mean, it has to begin from a place where you're already very sunk in despair, and then this kind of stuff can really pull you down. So I'm that a conventional movie can kind of address these issues, I think is fairly remarkable. Yeah. And you know, Ethan Hawke has had a great year. He directed a movie called Blaze, and then he was in Juliet Naked, and he was so good. And here he's at First Reform.
He's always good.
He's getting better with age.
He definitely is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he was not too shabby to start with. Like, he's always been a
wonderful
character.
We've given you a
character.
Lot of stuff.
Yes. Yes, we've given you a lot of stuff.
No excuse for not watching movies over this coming weeks.
Correct. And just to assure you that, you know, Rashmi and Joe and I are not just raving about our personal choices. It's not just us, right? Capernaum won the best audience award at Cannes Film Festival. At Cannes Film Festival, the critics awarded the highest top prize to Shoplifters. And then Roma has been on the top of, you know, most people's year's 10 best list. And it did win the top prize at the Venice Film Festival. So these are big name movies from filmmakers at the top of their game. So there's so much to seek out.
So good.
Yes.
Cool.
And we still haven't seen some stuff that's and still that's making thing. Its I mean, way through.
The,
so
the thing that's frustrating about award season is that so much comes out very, very late.
Yeah.
In part, I think they're kind of baiting the bigger awards.
Correct.
That they withhold their releases until the very last minute. So we'll have to see what plays out. But all of this is just to say it's a wonderful time to be a movie fan.
Wonderful time.
It is.
And if you've made it to the end of this podcast, I would count you among.
Congratulations. And thank you.
I would count you among the movie fans as well. So,
And don't be frustrated by your local multiplex where, very mediocre stuff might be playing. These are the best of times. You have access to remarkably high quality content with video on demand, with Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime, and there's all kinds of treasures to be unearthed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess this wraps up the final of our in-person podcast for the rest of the year. So thank you. Thank you for your continued support of Movie Wallahs, and we'll wrap up the podcast. Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. Do follow all of those services / Movie Wallahs to see what we're up to. Until our next podcast, Too Many Movies, Too Little Time, and goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Happy holidays.